All right, so today we are in The Good and Trustworthy Servant, part 9. Okay, part 9. Now, we are getting closer to the end because, see, this last page of notes here, that is actually my last page of notes for the part dealing with good. Okay, so I don't know how many parts it'll take to go through all of this, but this is my last page of references that we have for the topic of good. Then we'll go and shift into trustworthy, right? All right, now, so we're going to begin in James chapter 3. James chapter 3, Yaakov 3, and verse 17. All right, now, if you're new and this is the first part you're listening to, you'll need to go back and listen to the other 8. We've been looking at the understanding of the verse that talks about, well done, you good and trustworthy servant. And since that's something that apparently we really advantageous to hear those words, right? Those are words everybody should want to hear. We should understand what they're actually describing. Well done, what? What did you do to hear the words well done? Well, you were good and you were trustworthy and you were a servant. So we're going to explore and have been exploring those 3 elements, okay? Of course, the well done part means you did something. Okay, for everybody who thinks works is like a 4-letter word or a 5-letter word, I guess. And so work, oh, you know. But you don't get to hear well done if you didn't do anything. Okay? So you have to do something. The question is, what is the doing you have to do? And we've been talking about good. And good is only in the context of the above. Nothing is good except that which is from the above. Okay? That which is of Elohim is that which is good. So when we talk about good works, they're works in line with what the above teaches us to do. We talk about good fruit, it's fruit worthy of the above. Anything that has to do with good has to be in line with the above. And isn't it wonderful that he gives us a book that explains to us what we would need to do to be considered good? He tells us what's good, he tells us what's not good. And so it's not really that complex as long as we're willing to yield to it, right? And then do the part that we have to do, the doing of it, right? All right, James chapter 3, and in verse 17. But the wisdom from above is first clean, then peaceable, gentle, ready to obey, filled with compassion and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now, I'm going to read this verse. We'll go through it a little bit, but then I'm going to go back to the beginning of the chapter for the context of this verse, right? Remember, we've always taught this. Context is everything. This is what most teachers fail at. They'll read a verse, and they won't really give you the context of what the author is talking about, why they're talking about it, what the issue is, so you understand what's going on, okay? So here, we're starting off with just, let's look at the verse itself. The wisdom from above. And so, what do we know about wisdom? So wisdom is the beginning of, right? The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. Wisdom is something is, so you take knowledge and information. Wisdom is how do you apply it correctly? What do you do with it, all right? Because otherwise, it's like I've talked about revelation, right? Information revealed to you is just information. If you receive it, now there's got some potential value to it, but then you have to apply it. But you know what? You can apply it in unwise ways. Wisdom is how is what you do with it, when you do with it. If you do with it in certain situations, in other words, there's wisdom there, okay? So it says the wisdom from above is clean. It's peaceable. So when we are applying wisdom in our lives, if we're doing it in the way that the above does, it's going to be clean, peaceable, gentle, ready to obey. This is a big problem for everybody, okay? Are you ready to obey? See, a lot of people, I don't know why it is, but they get to, well, I shouldn't say recently, because really, if you go back to the beginning, that's a problem all the way in Genesis, right? Ready to obey. But somehow, I think now, even more than ever, this new, I don't know how new it is, but it seems like a new focus of, well, we have the Spirit now, so we don't need to obey anything. We're just going to get this feeling inside or something and be led in some way, and then we don't need to obey anything. Because there's no structure now. We all personally just have our relationship with no structure. There's nothing between you and the above. There's no guidance. There's no structure. See, hey, oh, we know that Moses was there, and yes, of course. And we know others were there, and of course. Even those after Yeshua had structure. You only have all of Paul's writings because somebody had to write a letter or go visit him to find out, hey, what in the world are we going to do with these things that are happening here in our congregation? Did they not have the Spirit? Then why did they need to ask Paul anything? Because that's the way it's actually structured. Okay? Please don't be offended. Please don't be insulted. I've said this a lot lately. Said it, of course, in the Zone 3 last night. This book was never meant to be completely and fully understood by you without help. I'm not saying that you can't understand a big chunk of it, but it was never meant by the design, by the designer of the book, the author, for you to understand this without guidance and help. Not because you're not smart enough, not because you're stupid or anything, but because he wants you to be forced into the structure. And so he writes in parables to do that. And he wrote in parables in the old and the new. Okay, there are verses that say both. And so that's why you guys have so many questions. Because see, if the Ruach answered all your questions, you wouldn't have any questions. You simply ask the Ruach, you get your answer. And so you don't get an answer, so what do? You go on YouTube and you search. And then you find 57 different opinions about whatever it is you're asking a question about. And some match with one, some match with other. But you still, if you take the 57, you're still going to end up with three or four different things that they're basically saying. And they don't match, okay? You can look up tithing, which we've talked about, and you hear me talking that it's still in, you know, still in place as something we're supposed to do. You know, others say we shouldn't do it. You hear about Sabbath keeping, others say, oh, no, that's done away with. You hear about this, you're going to hear opinions on everything. But the question is, are you going to understand that the wisdom from above, oh, wait a minute, the wisdom, how do you get the wisdom from above? Well, I guess you could pray and you can get some of it directly, and that does happen occasionally. Or you could do what we see scripturally, where people who need wisdom from above, what do? They seek an anointed and ask for the wisdom from above. Is that not the case? All right? We see this even in the, you know, all going back to Abraham and Sarah. Okay, and then we see them again going through the other matriarchs and patriarchs where they've like, well, I got to go seek Elohim and ask a question. Well, how did they do that? They went to the anointed at the time and asked the question. And that's how they got their answers. There are very, very few people scripturally that Yahweh speaks to directly. Very, very few. Okay, and they're almost always called prophets. Okay? And by the way, how many prophets do you actually find in Scripture? 6,000 years, well, we'll say here, 4,000 years of history, and there's only what? A few dozen prophets? Okay? In 4,000 years? Okay, he's not speaking directly to that many people. He's speaking indirectly through those prophets. And so he's telling us that the wisdom from above, meaning if we want to have wisdom like the above has, that means that we are going to have something that's clean. What does clean mean? Okay, it's pure. It's not tainted, twisted, or mixed in some way. All right? Then we have that it's peaceable. I got a lot of people out there ready to fight about everything in the Scripture. They have a lot of contentiousness. I mean, they want to battle over everything. Which, by the way, doesn't work well with, like, you know, two or three words down. It says ready to obey. Okay, if you're not ready to obey, yeah, you might battle a little bit. If you're ready to obey, there's no fighting, right? Of course, it says gentle. Some of you think, Rabbi, you're not gentle. You've not counseled with me. You have no idea, all right? You have no idea. Yeah, gentle, by the way, doesn't mean 24/7. There's times where gentle is going to make things worse, okay? Okay, that's you have to understand the reality of these things, okay? But yes, gentle, ready to obey. And that's really the thing that I think we don't really get, this ready to obey. Maybe I'm going to have to, you know, I did a teaching called Do You Trust Him Enough to Obey Him? Maybe we need another teaching about obedience. Because I think that we struggle with this more than anything else. Let me ask you a question, a real simple question. And this is not beaten on enough, I think, in Torah observing community as it is in Christianity at times. One of the things that we should be understanding scripturally is that we are to be discipled. Can we agree? Now, I know Christianity kind of focuses on you going out and discipling, but you can't do what has not been done by you first. Okay? Now, first of all, you know I don't agree that Matthew 28 is talking about everybody going out and doing that, but those who are trained, right? Because you can't do what you weren't trained to do. So it's not for everybody to do. Yeshua was telling the ones he discipled, I trained you to do this, now go out and do what I trained you to do. Okay, by the way, just reading your book and sitting in a church did not train you to do anything. He like personally trained them to do these things and anointed them to do it. Now, that being said, what is discipleship? Because discipleship is not just a teacher and a bunch of students. Okay? Because you can sit in a classroom. All of you have done that. You've all sat in a classroom in your life. Some of you were homeschooled, so maybe you didn't sit in a classroom. But you understand the idea. You've seen people sit in a classroom. And the people in the classroom are, to whatever degree, listening or not listening or paying attention to whatever's being said. And they may agree or disagree with what the teacher's saying. They may even argue with the teacher. Every classroom I've been in, somebody argued with the teacher at some point. Probably was me. I was not the best kid in the world, okay? But these things can happen, but this is not discipleship. Okay, it's not discipleship. What is discipleship? Discipleship is a special, intimate, close relationship between a teacher and a student where that student completely trusts that teacher in what they're studying. In other words, there is no arguing with a teacher in discipleship. You don't argue with your discipler. That doesn't mean you can't ask questions because you don't understand something or something doesn't make sense to you and you're confused. Sure, you can have that discussion, but there's no arguing. The teacher, by the way, the teacher, if you're talking about scripturally, the discipler, weren't they supposed to be a disciple from above? So in other words, they're supposed to do things similar to how it was done with them. So when you go ultimately up to the top, what do you see? You see Yahweh at the top, right? So when Yahweh is talking to Abraham about what he's going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah, did he argue with him? No, he let Abraham ask a few questions. But know what it says? And when Yahweh had finished, it was done. Story over. Moses tried to argue a little bit, and Moses was told, look, we're not talking about this ever again. Do not bring this up again. Right? Yahweh, that's in Deuteronomy. He says, yeah, well, he was angry with me for your sake, he said. Because, yeah, because Moses was asking him to change his mind. And if he had changed his mind, that'd undermine everything. And so, no, that's not the way it would go. And so, if you're being discipled by me, by whoever, but you can argue with me, you're not being discipled. Okay, that's not the way it works. You know, I did a class, don't ask me how you can get access because it doesn't exist anymore, okay? But I did a class about, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago, an introduction to discipleship, and a bunch of the men were in this class. There's a few that are still with our ministry that were in the class. I think Shamish Gary and some others were in that class, okay? You were in that class too? All right, so Uncle Chuck was there too. And this class was an introduction to discipleship. Now, here's the thing I want to bring out about it, though. In the class was one particular gentleman that decided he wanted to argue with me. And I simply said to him, I think you're in the wrong place. And he got all offended. He said, what do you... I said, "That's if this is discipleship, there's no arguing. You don't get to push your agenda and try to get the discipler to do it your way. Do we all understand that? Okay? There's no arguing vertically. Not in the discipleship role. So when it's talking about the wisdom from above... The wisdom from above is that when you are in a proper anointed relationship with someone vertically, you are ready to obey. Which is also what Deuteronomy 17 tells you. When it says when a matter comes up that's too hard for you to know what to do and you go to the leadership at the time and they make a right ruling, you need to be ready to obey. You're not to go to the left or the right. Whatever they tell you to do, you're to do it. Otherwise, it's arrogance. And basically, he says, and you shall stone that person. Get rid. You know, you're going to kill that person so that you purge the evil out of the group. Wow. It's pretty strong stuff. But you guys are all, I get this. You're afraid because that puts a lot of power in the disciples' hands. Yeah, it does. That's why you need to find the right one. Because if it's the right one, they're not going to abuse that power. Do you understand? A right one is going to be doing it the way the above does it. See, it's the cults out there that have abusive ones in there that are not doing it the way the above does it. So yeah, it can, I get it. You can certainly be, quote unquote, putting yourself at some risk. Well, yes and no. You have to be finding that Ephesians 4, 11, 12, you know, that fivefold anointed person that you're supposed to help you get to be fully brought to where you need to be brought to in terms of Messiah. But if you find that person, the wisdom of above, from above, dictates you need to be ready to obey. See, ready to obey doesn't mean, well, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do with unleavened bread or something, and I tell you what it is, and you don't care really, so you just do whatever I say, right? That's not ready to obey. Ready to obey is you go to get that word, an instruction, and you don't necessarily like it or agree with it, but you're ready to obey. You're going to do what you're told. Same thing when you come for counseling. You know, if you're going to come for counseling, why do you come if you're not ready to obey? Well, I didn't know what else to do. Well, there's lots of options out there. You can watch videos. You can go find a counselor, therapist, whatever. You can go find, talk to a friend. But if you're going to call us, are you ready to obey? And sadly, 50-50. We do have some that do. And they, by the way, you heard a lot of their testimonies on the great fruit they're getting. I don't know why some of you just refuse to accept that that's true, even though they'll stand up there and tell you. And by the way, they'll also tell you they didn't like what I said sometimes, and they didn't agree with it sometimes, but they did it anyway, and lo and behold, it works. Because what he says next is, after being ready to obey, that you're filled with compassion and good fruits. See, good fruits comes out of this order of being clean, peaceable, gentle, and ready to obey, and filled with compassion. Then you can bring good fruits. What are good fruits? Fruits worthy of the above. Things you do that produce these good fruits are things that the above has dictated for you to do. They're prescribed by the above. He says, without partiality and without hypocrisy. So he's also saying that all these things that you're doing, even if you do them well, if you only do them to some people because you're showing partiality, that's not good. Right? We're talking about what good is, that's not good. And if you do it with hypocrisy, well, I'm going to do it outwardly to show everybody, but inwardly, I really don't believe any of that stuff. There's hypocrisy in that. There's also hypocrisy in you demanding of others what you won't do. That's hypocrisy too. Huge. This is one of the things, by the way, the Pharisees got kind of called out on by Yeshua, right? He said, well, look, you tell everybody to do all these things. Meanwhile, you're not doing what, you know. So he said, look, do what they tell you to do, but don't do what they do. Because they don't do what they say. You know, you got to walk the talk. Don't just talk. A lot of people, look, if you go and tell your friends and family members that you're a Torah observant, then you better be making the effort to be Torah observant. And if you don't know what that should actually look like, because you may be being very loosey-goosey with things because you don't know what the actual Torah observance looks like, that's where you have an above structure in place by the above. You have the structure in place that you can get your information from and guidance from so you know how to, when to, what to, why to, and everything else so that you actually understand. So let's go to the beginning of the chapter to understand what it is that James is getting at. Okay? Now, interestingly enough, it finishes with his wisdom from above, and it starts with, not many of you should become teachers, my brothers. Knowing that we shall receive greater judgment. Look, I know a lot of you don't think you're teaching when you are. Okay? Anytime that you try to guide or instruct, especially somebody vertically above you, you're trying to teach. When you argue, you're teaching. Okay? Somebody says to me, well, what about this way of doing whatever? And I say, well, that's not the way the scripture says. And then you start to argue. Okay? Well, now you're teaching me. And I don't have a problem with people trying to teach me. I don't know why they would try to do that. But, you know, somebody thinking, oh, that's real cocky and everything. Well, look, I know my position. And I know the information I get and where it comes from. So what would be your qualifications to teach me? Someone said, well, what's your qualification? I don't have any qualifications to teach you. Don't listen. You came to me. Okay, I didn't go to you. I didn't come to your house, knock on your door. I showed up on your screen and on YouTube and you decided to click on it. Or somebody recommended it to you. I didn't come to you. All right? But you, the people that argue with me often, they come to me. They call up, make an appointment. They want to argue about something. And I look at them like, well, why would I listen to you? I don't know you. I don't know your qualifications. What makes you think you know more than I know? I'm not saying they don't, but why would they, how am I supposed to believe that? If I'm going to tell you to vet out and find those anointed appointed, well, certainly I'm not going to listen to anybody that I haven't vetted out to figure out that they may know something. Why would I tell you to do something? I'm not going to do it. But he's warning people, and all of you need to hear this. Not many of you should become teachers. And he's talking to his brothers. He said, my brothers, don't do this, knowing that we shall receive a greater judgment. So warning, 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 Will Robinson. Warning. One day it's going to be like too old to say that and people will not know what I'm talking about. Lost in space. All right. So that's from the 60s. All right. So he's saying, look, there's a greater judgment. If you're going to teach, why would there be a greater judgment? Because not only are you understanding something the way you understand it and doing it yourself, if you're not a hypocrite, but now you're going to teach others to do it. And if you're wrong, not only are you going to have a judgment for you being wrong, now you're getting a greater judgment because now you've taught others to do the thing that you're doing wrong. And they were trusting you in the teacher role. So I have issue at times with a lot of people out there with what they're teaching. My bigger concern is that they don't understand the double judgment, the greater judgment that they're getting, that they're going to get, because they're just out there running their mouth with, and they don't know, mostly they don't know that they don't know. They've been doing this for too short a period of time without a discipler. Often I find some teachers out there that kind of get it on some of their teachings and are off on others. I'm thinking the one thing this person's missing is a teacher. A discipler teacher, not just, see, when I say a teacher, I don't mean, well, I listen to five different people, they're my teachers. No, I'm talking about a teacher, the teacher that you're listening to. That doesn't mean you can't listen to teachings, but if anything is said by any of those other teachers, so-called teachers, you need to always make sure it's in line with your teacher. If you have a genuinely anointed Ephesians 4:11 teacher. How do you know? That's always your problem, right? You're going to have to pray about it. That's the one thing you should be looking to the Ruach for. And one of the things you're going to have to really do is check yourself on whether or not you like a teacher because you like the way you feel because of what they say, or because when they say it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's really what it says. Especially if you don't like it, you're like, oh my gosh, I've had it wrong. And especially if you're like, man. Because you don't like that you're wrong now. But are you ready to receive? That's really where the problem comes in. He says, for we all stumble in many matters. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the entire body. Okay, so he's talking about stumbling in the word. He says, look, we put bits in the mouths of horses for them to obey us, and we turn their body. Look at the ships also. They, although they're so big and driven by strong winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot intends. So too, the tongue is a little member, yet boasts greatly. See how a little fire kindles a great forest. And the tongue is a fire, the world of unrighteousness. Among our members, the tongue is set, the one defiling the entire body and setting on fire the wheel of life, and it is set on fire by Gehenna. So what is he saying? He's saying, look, we're talking about the tongue, because a lot of people talk about these verses about you got to be careful about what you say and how you treat people. This is talking about teaching. No, it's not, I don't want to, nothing in scripture is like one thing. Okay, it's not like only about teaching, but primarily, isn't the subject teaching? So when he starts talking about the tongue, it's in the context of teaching. And what he's saying is, you who do not bridle your tongue, you know what that looks like? Those of you that cannot resist to open your mouth when you shouldn't, in a teaching capacity to correct someone, to straighten them out, or to share something that you think you're helping them when you really don't know what you're talking about. You think you do, but you don't. Look, and I don't want to be offensive or insulting, but I've used this model before. I want you to really consider the model of, if you've been doing this for 3 years, it's like you're a third grader. If you've been doing it for 6 years, it's like a sixth grader. So how do you think you're qualified, you know, to argue and teach someone when you've only been doing this such a short while? Think about how little you knew in sixth grade compared to when you graduated from high school or college or whatever. And it's not like you learn different things all the time. You just learn the same stuff on a deeper level. Okay, you learned math in elementary school, third grade and fourth grade. Guess what? You learned it again in high school, and you learned it again in college. But the level of understanding of the subject was much greater later, wasn't it? Okay? And here you are thinking you're teaching people. Well, I'm all excited about what I'm learning. Good. Do what you're learning the best you can. Keep your mouth shut. I know it's hard to do. Look, if you have a teacher and somebody brings up something, point them to your teacher. If the teacher has a teaching already available to watch or listen to, point them to the teaching. I'm the teacher in this particular context, right? I'm a teacher. You know what I do when people ask me questions? First thing I ask them is, did you watch the teaching? If they say no, I said, well, then you need to go listen to it first before I think. Because if the teaching took, you know, 5 parts, 5 hours to really explain correctly, thoroughly, how am I supposed to do that in a phone call in 30 minutes? Okay, there's no way. And so, even as the teacher, I point to the teaching. I could answer the question. After all, I taught the subject, right? I could answer, but I also realize it's not going to help you to get my short answer on something that you have been getting, that you've been doing from a wrong perspective for 30, 40 years. So whatever I tell you is going to swim upstream against that indoctrinated routine of thinking, that way of thinking and seeing things. If I'm going to tell, I have people all the time, Elder can tell you this, it's amazing how often this happens, that we'll get people to call here and they say, whatever it is, and Elder will ask, or I'll ask, did you watch the teaching? And in the name of the teaching, whatever it was, and they say, yes. And then they continue after that to say everything possible that proves they heard nothing. Now, that doesn't mean they didn't listen to it. It means they either didn't listen to it or, probably more likely, they could not receive the information. Revelation has to be received. Okay? So just sending you to the teaching isn't going to do you any good if you're not ready to receive. Which kind of goes back to what we read in verse 17, the idea of being ready to obey. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean they didn't understand what I said in the teaching. They could not receive it. Okay? I did a teaching on divorce, remarriage, and putting away. There's a section in Matthew, everybody always quotes, where Yeshua is talking about these things, right? And I've had at least 5 people in the last however many years since I did the teaching make it through to get into a phone call to talk to me and ask me, well, what about here in Matthew where it says this? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I spent 30 minutes on that in the teaching. And I'm like, did you listen to the teaching? Yes. I covered that for 30 minutes in the teaching, at least. But they could not receive. So what the wisdom from above is saying is, hey, you have to come to the vertical authority ready to receive, ready to obey, because you can't obey without receiving. And then he's warning us again, let's watch out now with this tongue thing. Don't all of you think you need to be teaching, because this is what happens. This little thing, this tongue, you said a little word out there and you confuse a bunch of people and they start running in whatever direction, and now we got a big problem. Okay? Which is why I've had to tell people, I haven't said this in a long time, but we used to say this on a very regular basis. I don't care what you believe when you start attending here, but if you believe anything that I don't teach, you need to keep that to yourself until you figure out whether or not this is where you need to be. Because I don't need you to use this as a new marketplace for your ideas. So if you come here, well, I'm a this and I believe that or this about whatever it is, I don't need you going out there and sharing that. Why? Because the people here wanted to hear what I had to say, not what you had to say. All right? Now, some of you are clapping for that, and I get that, but you know what? Are you ready to tell the person, hey, I didn't come here to hear what you had to say. I came here to hear what Rabbi had to say. And shut them down. But you don't. You know what you do? You entertain what they're saying. Well, what if they're right? Well, if they're right, why don't they have an audience? And why don't they have a ministry? And why don't they have a platform if they're right? Okay? Not that everybody with a platform is right, but I'm saying if they're right, why don't they at least have something to get that out there? All right? Came up the other night. Somebody was asking, and this is a new person. Nothing wrong with the new person. Hopefully they're watching today. Asked about Rosh Chodesh being a Sabbath. And I said, no, it's not. Okay? I went to quote a certain verse, that the same verses, only three or four verses that cover this at all. And I explained them. But the whole point is, that person, I give credit, seemed like they were ready to receive. Okay? But you have to be ready to receive. Because you can come here with whatever your agenda may be. And you don't even think of it as an agenda. You're just, this is what an agenda looks like. I'm really passionate about something and I'm going to share it with everybody. So my agenda is everybody to think like I think. Even if it's not a conscious agenda. So you believe the Sabbath starts during the day. I get people believe that and they contact me and all this, want to argue about that. Then there's people that believe in the lunar Sabbath. There are people that believe in whatever other calendar related issue, okay? And I say, look, this is the right ruling from this microphone. You're either going to be okay with that or you're not, but we're not arguing about it. Period. Now, this is also part of the reason why we are, I don't know if I want to say in desperate need, but this is why we need a proper Ephesians 4:11 filled Sanhedrin. We need a body that will be respected to make right rulings, to do the Deuteronomy 17 things. Okay? That's part of why I built, why he gave me the guidance to build MTOI. The reason it was built was really because I tried to get other leaders to come together to build something together, and it just did not work out. Everybody kind of gave a lip service like they thought it was a great idea, but nobody really thought it was a great idea. Nobody wanted to put in the effort. So then I felt like the Ruach told me, well, if you build it, then we'll set it. It'll be like this example of what it could look like. Just build it. Okay, so we did. And we have a leadership council. And by the way, everybody in the leadership council, as far as I can tell, is ready to obey. All right? And they weren't selected as yes men. And we do have times that things come up that we kind of, people ask and debate about a little bit. But if I do a James, you know, like James did in Acts 15 and says, okay, this is what we're going to do, then they all shut down and say, okay, Rabbi made a decision. That's what we're going to do. That's the correct vertical model. But it's only the correct vertical model if you actually find the right person to be in that vertical structure with. That burden is really on you. I hate to put it on you. I hate to say, I'm sorry that it's your problem, but that is your biggest problem. Stop just listening to everybody, okay? Oh, but I like the way this one talks. And I don't like the way you talk. I don't care if you like the way I talk. The way I talk is not the issue. The words, the message, that's the issue. Well, we don't like the message. Well, then maybe you're in the wrong place or you're just not ready. Look, not everybody's ready for Yeshua either. It says that Yeshua said a bunch of stuff and a bunch of people left. Okay? I mean, I thought that was shocking when I read that verse. Like, wow. I mean, like a whole bunch of them no longer walked with him. They were actually walking with Messiah and they said, nah, we don't think he's the one. We didn't like what he said. And it wasn't that he said anything that was that bad. They just didn't understand what he said. You know, they thought he was talking about cannibalism or something, like, you know, if you don't eat my body and drink my blood and whatever, they just weren't getting it. So instead of saying, hey, you just said something really bizarre, I don't get it, they just like, this guy's whatever, and they walked away. Lots of people have walked away from me as a teacher. Lots of people walked away from lots of different teachers. But you got to figure this all out. So this is talking about the tongue, I believe, first and foremost, from the form of the information instructionally coming out of your mouth, all right? Now, he says in verse 7, for every kind of beast and bird of the reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man is able to tame the tongue. It is unruly, evil, filled with deadly poison. With it we bless our Elohim and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of Elohim. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Well, actually, let me read the rest of this just to finish this out. Does a fountain send forth sweet and bitter waters out of the same opening? A fig tree able to bear olives, grapevine figs? So neither is a fountain able to make salt and sweet water. Now, let me stop right there. Do we all understand that the tongue is nothing? The tongue is just a part of what the brain, the mind, the heart uses to communicate. So while he's talking about the tongue, he's really talking about the thinking and emotions that drive what comes out of your mouth. Don't get confused here. Oh, the tongue is evil and the tongue does this and the tongue does that. The tongue does nothing unless you consciously make it do something, so to speak. The words coming out of your mouth are something you think about. They're either coming out of a thought or an emotion combined with a thought. And that's, especially when it's emotion driven, you really get in trouble. Okay? And so this, keep that in mind when he talks about man's not able to tame the tongue. No, he's not able to tame his heart and his mind and his, what's really driving that? Desire. I want everybody to agree with me. I want everybody to see how smart I am. I want everybody to think I'm, you know, I understand. I want. It's driven by desire. Man can't tame his desire. Ooh. That's what it's talking about. The tongue is just, you can keep your mouth shut if you want. And then you want to say something and you open your mouth. But it's the brain and the heart that's driving that, isn't it? I mean, a lot of you have wanted to say something but knew you shouldn't and kept your mouth shut at times in your life. The tongue didn't just ignore you and start talking. Okay? Okay? Whether you say or don't say is driven by what you want. There's times that you really want to say something, but then you have another emotion that says, I'm afraid to say something, so then guess what? You still don't. So you wanted to, and the tongue didn't do anything until you actually balanced the desire to do it and the fear, whichever one won out. So it's not the tongue, okay? It's the end result of the emotion, drive, desire, thought process, etc. And we have to control that. This is where Yeshua says things like taking every thought into captivity. And he talks about getting a hold of your lusts and your desires. You can't be driven by lusts and desires. And by the way, a lust and desire is things like, I want everybody to see the calendar the way I do. I want everybody to see the earth the way I do. I want everybody to see whatever. I don't care what it is. We have to get a hold of our emotions. It needs to be, the wisdom from above is clean and peaceable. Let's start with peaceable first. You need to have peace with people not agreeing with you. It's okay if they don't agree with you. You don't need to convince everybody to think the way you do and feel the way you do and believe the way you do. Now, of course, Christianity, which is a tool of the enemy to a certain degree, I know that's going to get me all kinds of popularity, works really hard to get you to think it is your job to get everybody to agree with you. That you must go out there and convince everybody they're wrong and you're right, and they have to do it the way you see it. That's not what Scripture is talking about. None comes as the Father draws. Not none comes unless you go out there and bother them. Okay? And by the way, the Father drawing, if you went from your own personal experience, okay, was something that happened without outside people. Can we all agree that our experience was he did something to touch you and you started to feel like something was wrong or missing in your world? It wasn't because some person came over to you and said, oh, by the way, don't you know the Sabbath's on Saturday? And you said, you're an idiot. I think it's been done away with. I mean, you've had those conversations before he touched you. Many of you were exposed to people that were Torah observant before you thought it was even something to consider. And you just wrote them off as whatever. How many of you have had that experience? Right? Okay? But that was before you had him touch you. So sending a person to say, by the way, can't you just see that right here? You can see it. It's right here. A lot of you try that with your friends and your family members, and that doesn't work. Any of you went over your friends and family by showing them how logically right you are? Nobody? Okay. Nobody did that? No, I'm saying it doesn't work. Because it's not through logic and rational thinking. They're delusional. Right? It says our fathers have inherited lies. We've been given strong delusion. What do you think that means? Well, we've been lied to about what the book says and what really happened throughout the history of the scriptures. And we've been given a delusion. What's a delusion? It's an incorrect way of seeing the world that we live in. Not just the world like the planet, but the world that we live in. But we think we're living in a reality that's not really the full reality. That's why I call it bubble popping. I see you're in this delusional bubble. And when he puts his finger, puts a little hole in it, all of a sudden you look through the hole and realize, whoa, there's a whole different world out there beyond what I thought. And some of what I thought was real is not, and some of what I thought I wasn't real is real. Now what am I supposed to do with this? Okay? That's why he called them Israel, because you have to see what is real. Okay, never mind. I just made that up. Because you're supposed to be a people that see what is real. Of course, it was in Hebrew, not English. But yeah. These are the kind of crazy things he puts in my head. Okay. And only as I'm talking, it comes right out. Because I can't bridle the tongue. There you go. But hopefully you understand. He's saying, look, our speaking, he starts off with teaching. And then we may speak when we shouldn't, say what we shouldn't, and not realize we're getting a greater judgment. Then he says, look, this tongue thing, in other words, what's driving us creates all kinds of fires. We say all kinds of stuff that gets us in trouble. Anybody ever say anything got you in trouble? Everybody? Like often, daily, you know, you just open your mouth and put your foot in it and get yourself in all kinds of trouble. All right? I know a bunch of you walking around like this with your foot hovering. Any moment is going right in. Okay? As you walk around life with your foot right there and your mouth open. Okay, just ready to go, wham. And look, I mean, some of you are laughing because that's you. You're like, yep, that's me. All right? But then he's saying, as we're going down to the end of this, all right, let's kind of scroll back down here. He says, now we get to verse 13. Because he's trying to say that, you know, before that, the last thing he said before we get to verse 13 is, he's saying, you can't have two different things coming out of the same source, okay? So you need to be aware that you can't, you know, just think that, you know, well, you're going to bless and curse out of the same mouth. And see, if you do, then that's really just hypocrisy, because then really the blessing isn't a true blessing, okay? So he says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by his good behavior his works in meekness of wisdom. If you're wise, you're going to demonstrate it through your works. What works is he talking about? Well, part of it is whether you decide to be a student or a teacher. There's wisdom in deciding which one of those you're supposed to be, because that's where the chapter started, okay? And he's going to now explain more about the wisdom part, okay? He says, let him show his good behavior. So what's good behavior? A behavior that is, by the above standard, correct. Because the above is what decides what's good. And then he goes, but if you have bitter jealousy and self-seeking in your hearts, oh, the drivers of the tongue, okay? The tongue isn't the problem. It's the end result of the problem, which is these things that are driving. Bitter jealousy, self-seeking in your heart. He says, do not boast against and lie against the truth. So that's where he says, watch your tongue because you don't know. Well, Rabbi got me mad and he hurt my feelings, so I'm going to say bad things about him. It doesn't hurt me. I don't know why you think it would, but, you know. I get all the time people finding videos out there that somebody did a video attacking something I said or whatever, and they look at me like, well, what are you going to do about it? I'm like, nothing. What are you going to do about it? I don't care. He called me to talk, and he's going to have the people he wants that those words to reach to find that the teaching that I do, okay? And no amount of people attacking it is going to stop that from happening, okay? And if it does, it's filtering people that really don't need to hear it. they're not ready or whatever, okay? That's the way I have to approach it. I think you would agree, right? So understand that if you have this bitter jealousy, self-seeking in your heart, he says, this is not the wisdom coming down from above. See, that's not from above. There's negative emotions or these self-seeking. So I want, I don't like, whatever. That's all this negative emotion, inappropriate emotional stuff that's driving, by the way, the people who are doing what? Teaching. Starts in the beginning of the chapter. They're either trying to teach and tear down some stuff because they're bitter and jealous, or they're self-seeking. Okay? Look, I could very easily, okay, this is with all humility, I know my personality type and the humor I have and whatever, I could have 1 million subscribers if I taught what I thought you would want to hear. Not you, but people would want to hear. I'd have a huge audience and I'd entertain the life out of them, and I could have that if I was self-seeking, okay? There's no doubt. Actually, one of the funniest guys ever to come visit our congregation, this was in Nashville, this is about 23 years ago, sat down in the same row where my wife was sitting during the teaching, and he looked at her and said, man, your husband's really good. You know, if he would do this on Sunday, he'd have a huge audience. Clearly, he didn't get anything I was doing. She was like, man, if he would do this on Sunday, he'd have a giant, because, I mean, the congregation in Nashville at the time had like 15 people in it, okay? 15 or 20, I mean, it's a very small congregation. And so he was like, I was like, look, I could have as big an audience as I want if I just wanted to be out there to get that. But then what would I be doing with the truth? You know? Okay, I can't hold back because I'm afraid it's going to hurt someone's feelings or whatever. You already have everybody else out there doing that. You don't need another one. Okay? He says, so you need to understand, this is about teaching and whether or not you should be, and being aware of your emotions driving your tongue. Okay? Which also means that, now again, this is not formal teaching, but if you are going to attack and judge your family members or friends because they're doing Easter, they're doing Christmas, they're doing whatever, that's still teaching, coming out of a bitter jealousy or self-seeking or some other self-righteous indignation you think you have, okay? And you're going to justify that nonsense by thinking you're doing the work from the above because I'm defending him. Where's the verse that says you need to defend him? Is there a verse in here that says he wants you to defend him? He wants you to follow him, believe him, obey him. There's no verse in here that says you need to defend him. But all these people want to make these nasty posts, and don't you get wrapped up in it as Easter is coming and start putting all this attacking posts on your Facebook. Because nobody that's looking at it is going to get it right. You know what's going to happen? One of two things. Either other people, as jerkish as you are, and I'm being serious, are going to think it's funny like you do, and that's a jerkish behavior, mocking other people, okay? Or they're going to just write you off as being, you know, crazy in some way and think you're just mean-spirited, because it's not going to get them to realize, oh my gosh, I'm so stupid. Okay, I don't think anybody's ever told me, you know, I thought I was right until somebody wrote this mocking post on their Facebook and I realized I was an idiot. Okay? I mean, that doesn't happen. We should be above that. That's not of the above. Don't mock other people's beliefs. Okay? Just make sure you're not doing the things you know you should not be doing. And don't participate. Oh, no, don't think I'm not human enough that if I see some of these posts, I don't ever go on Facebook. Somebody might show me one or something, and I might immediately, out of a flesh, start laughing and think it's funny, okay? But then I realize it's not funny because it's attacking somebody that doesn't understand. And they're only doing basically what most of you did before you knew, okay? I mean, most of you came out of Christianity, and most of you did all these things. By most, I mean like 90-something percent, okay? So, you know, let's not attack other people what they do. There's no reason to do that. promote what you are doing, that's fine. You know, get excited about talking about the Passover thing we're doing here or whatever, and you want to post something on your site. But do not attack everybody else. That's not from above. There's nothing peaceable about that. It's not gentle. It's not clean, okay? There's no compassion in it. There's no good fruit that will ever come out of it. He says, this is not, when we do this emotionally driven bitterness, jealousy, self-seeking, whatever. Self-seeking, by the way, is not just looking to aggrandize yourself. It means I'm going to feel better if I attack you because it's going to make me feel better. That's still self. You're seeking something for yourself to feel a certain way. So in other words, self-seeking means it's about you. Okay, it's not just trying to promote yourself, but it's about how I feel, and I will feel better because I'm all offended by whatever you're doing, so I have to attack it. A lot of you come out of you want to get your little pound of flesh. You take it personally, so you want your little pound of flesh, so you're going to attack because you don't like the way you feel with whatever they're doing, so you're going to try to make them feel that way too. That's not from above. Don't be like that. That is not from above. Okay? He says, this is not the wisdom coming down from above, but it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. And remember, this started off with teaching when you shouldn't be teaching. See, but a lot of you just don't want to understand just how much you should respect the idea of teaching. In other words, I'm not saying you should be afraid of it. I mean, I don't do this in a fearful way. I am hyper aware that everything I say, if you do it, is on me, okay? If it's wrong, if it's not wrong, if it's right, it's all on him, obviously. But if it's wrong, it's on me, okay? And so I don't take any credit for it being right. But certainly if it's wrong, it's me. And I know that every time I get up here, which is why, you know, people have said, well, I just hope you never stop just throwing it. Listen, I can't do this any other way because then I would be in hypocrisy and I would not be genuine and true to the truth. And some of you are like, well, why can't you say it in a different way? Because it's me. You're asking me to not be me. I'm saying it the way I say things. It's still his message. And some of you, by the way, it's funny. It's like certain teams. You either love them or hate them, all right? I'm one of those guys, people either love the way I deliver it or they hate the way I deliver it. Not a lot of neutrals, okay? And it's amazing, the same people that love the way whatever I'm throwing out there, other people, the same exact teaching, the same thing I said, will hate it. Stop getting distracted by how I said it. It's the words that matter. Okay, the message. What's the point that he is trying to send out of my mouth to you? What is the point? Well, I don't like that you yell so much. Well, sorry. Turn the volume down. Watch on your phone or on your TV. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Okay. Do we not completely accept that he's in charge? Okay. So if he's in charge, fully in charge, and if he does the drawing and calling, and he. I'm saying if, you know, if he's in charge and all this other, and he's the one that put you here or led you on if you're online or whatever, that I would be your teacher, then he wanted you to deal with this. Okay? I mean, I'm just saying, if you believe all of those little pieces of the puzzle, first of all, that he is in charge, that he does the drawing, that he decides where to send you, where to lead you to, etc. And a lot of you felt led and found this and felt all excited about it until I said that one thing that one time in a way you didn't like. And then all of a sudden I went from being the best thing since sliced bread to being, you know, an idiot who doesn't know what he's doing. Because, or some rude, obnoxious, whatever you wanted to call me. I mean, you know, whatever it was. But yet, is he not sovereign? And did he not do the guiding, leading of you to this? If that's true, I'm saying. I'm not saying it is true to everyone. But if that's true, and then you moved yourself from wherever you live to be here, because almost the whole congregation moved here. I don't mean John. I know you lived here. There's a few of you actually now that were here first before. But like 90-something percent of the congregation moved here. And a whole bunch of you moved here then left. I'm like, if he moved you here, why would you ever leave? Well, because, you know, he faked us out and you're not really what we thought you were or whatever because you hurt our feelings. What? Come on, really? seriously, then you really took moving here way too lightly. Okay? I mean, if you literally took your whole life, uprooted it to come here, and you didn't come here fully ready to receive this style or whatever, to receive whatever it is I do, well, I came because I was hoping my kids could have fellowship with that. Okay, that's still a good reason to be here, I guess, to some degree. But you're going to have to hear me every week. And by the way, at 60 years old, I can see this another 40 years of this, at least, okay? You know. And so, get used to it. Get over it, all right? I mean, get over it. Because he's telling you that this kind of behavior is not from above. It's earthly, fleshly, demonic. Wow. And by demonic, we're not, okay, let me just kind of throw this out there. Demonic doesn't mean you're being possessed. It's demonic, you were taken over. No. When we say things are like the wisdom from above, it means your wisdom, that you're, the things that you're doing are in line with the above. This other stuff is in line with the demonic. It's not saying that demons came in and got involved, okay? But saying that when you do these certain things, you're thinking like and behaving like the above. And when you're doing these other things, you're thinking like and behaving like demons. Fleshly, earthly, and demons. Wow, I mean, you're going to figure that out or not? Which is why, and this is what, of course, you, some of you love it and some of you hate, which is why 90% of the people with microphones need to shut up. And I'm not saying that to be offensive or judgmental, but all those YouTube guys and all these teachers, most of you guys need to shut up and find an anointed, appointed teacher. Get your, some of you have a lot of talent. Good. Go get discipled and then open your mouth. So you don't sound like this mixed mess Torah observing Christianity. Okay? Because that's what you're doing. Most of you have made the simple mechanical switch of you're eating differently and you're keeping different days, right? So you're doing Saturday now, not Sunday. You're doing the holy days instead of the Christmas and Easter thing, and you eat differently. Other than that, you're as Christian as the day is long. All your other doctrinal positions are going to be pretty much Christianity. That is not the wisdom from above, okay? It has to all be this. It has to be just this, not what comes from that system that, by the way, tells you this was done away with. Look, I know a lot of people get out there, why do you keep picking on Christianity? Because the system tells you that the core of your covenant was done away with. What more do you want me to say? Well, I just got to be nice to them. They're our brothers and our sisters, not mine. And I'm not judging them, okay? Listen, there was a teaching that you can see out there. This guy's out there attacking anything Torah observant. And the guy was saying that there are those out there that insist that the followers of Jesus need to keep the law. Well, followers of Jesus don't need to do anything. Followers of Yeshua need to keep the law. Now, if you don't know what I just said, go listen to Beware False Prophets. Okay? And then you'll understand what I just said. Because if I did a rebuttal video, my first thing would say, well, no, you're correct. They, you know. Because Jesus is not the Yeshua of the Bible. Jesus is the way Christianity altered and twisted what Messiah was. Okay? I mean, both the way I describe Yeshua and the way they describe Jesus is trying to describe the same being. They've just bent and twisted it so it doesn't even look like him anymore. Okay? Because they claim that this Jesus is the reason why you don't need to keep the law. When I believe Yeshua is the strongest reason you need to keep the law. We are in opposing positions. Okay? He didn't come to rid you of this burden. He came to explain it more deeply and why it's important and to show you what it looks like when you do it correctly. To give it to you more fully. But you don't want to receive that. You're all going to get mad at me and think I'm anti-Christian, I'm not. The system is a problem. And all of you that call yourselves Christians, you're trapped in a system of lies. part-truths, half-truths, and all this other nonsense. Get mad at the system. Don't get mad at me. I didn't make you go there. If you're watching me this long, then you must be at least open to some of this. Stop dogmatically holding on to what you always had when it's wrong. Well, who are you to say whatever? Nobody. I'm nobody. Don't listen. Okay? Unless you think I am. I don't think I'm anybody. Just started talking. People started listening. And then more people were listening. I just kept talking. Okay? That's the truth. Look, you can ask my wife. She'll tell you, I ruined about half her friends when we first got married because I would talk nonstop about this stuff and they didn't want to hear it. So Abba, in his mercy, gave me an audience that wanted to hear it. So I stopped driving everybody crazy. Okay? Because I'd wear a few people out. And so he, you know... And I've told the story. We'll do it. We'll record it at one point again, this sort of the journey I went on. But, you know, and that's why you're all here, because you want to hear this, okay? Which means because I have so many of you, I don't feel compelled to tell anybody else anything. I pretty much leave everybody else alone, which is beneficial to both you and them, okay? So now we get to the verse we started with. Okay, so now he's comparing, again, I think it starts with the teaching and what's driving our use of our tongue. And he says, look, you can come from this one position, which is demonic. But then he says, but the opposite of this earthly, fleshly, demonic sort of approach is self-seeking, this bitterness and all this other stuff, which, by the way, most of the people that leave all bitter. Okay, well, he hurt my feelings and he went, all right. Get your feelings back in the feelings bag and knock it off, okay? So he then compares it and says, but the wisdom from above. So he's telling you this other stuff is the wisdom from below. And so in case you're new to hearing all this, there's lots of different ways of pairing up the above and the below, heavenly and earthly, spiritual and fleshly, right? Okay, so you have, it's the same thing. It's always talking about the same thing. That which is above, which comes from the Creator, and that which is just our human desires, okay? He says that wisdom from above is clean. Okay, it's pure. It's peaceable. It's gentle. It's ready to obey. It's filled with compassion and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So he's also saying, I guess, back to the beginning of the chapter, that a lot of this teaching that's going on is creating division and not bringing peace. And by the way, the next chapter starts with, why do fightings and strivings come from among you? Do they not come from your pleasures that battle in your members? You desire and don't have. You murder and are jealous and are unable to obtain. You strive and fight and you do not possess because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask evilly in order to spend it on your pleasures. That's what's driving all of this, including those teaching. Ooh. You know, Paul talks about it. I mean, I did a teaching called, you know, division in the body, but right? What do I call it? Unity and division. Thank you. Unity and division in the body. It starts off with verses Paul wrote, these verses here that James is writing, where it says, why there should not be. He says, why are there divisions among you? There should not be. Well, because we're still doing this. We desire and don't have. These things come from the pleasures that battle in our members. What do you mean they battle in our members? Yahweh says A, and I want B. And that's a fight going on inside. So you know what you end up doing? The B part comes out, and you'll feel better if others agree with you before you just run off and do it yourself. You don't want to be doing B while everybody else is doing A all by yourself. So then you're going to look for susceptible people out there that you might be able to get to go over to B. So you find them in the back of the room after services or before services and look for the little crack in there where you may be able to get your little point in and find someone that's going to disciple under you and get you to believe what you believe. Now you're causing division. Go listen to that division. I might need to redo that teaching. Look. division is one of the biggest problems in the body. Unity is what we're supposed to have. Ephesians 4:11 says that this is all about coming into unity. Okay, let's just read that real quickly again for like the 100th time. Ephesians 4, okay, let me get there. Okay, it says, and he himself gave some. He himself gave them. He gave. He anointed. Some to be, all right? He says emissaries, which are apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. But listen to the next two verses. The reason he gave these people was for the perfecting of the set apart ones. Perfecting is not like, hey, as long as we can all kind of agree on some things or most things, we're all good. Perfecting. The set apart ones to the work of service, to a building up of the body of Messiah, until these guys are there to keep doing this until we come. We all come to the unity of the belief. Now, we all say we believe in Messiah, but do we believe in Messiah the same? No. Do we see Messiah the same? No. Do we understand what Messiah taught, did, and etc. expects from us? No. We don't agree on any of that stuff. He says, until we come to the unity of belief and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim. Now, by knowledge, it's a relational thing. Do you know him? Right? Like did the teaching. Do you know the Father and the Son? Do you know? Because remember, the guy came up to Yeshua and said, Lord, Lord, we did all this stuff in your name. And he goes, I didn't have a relationship with you. I don't know you. So this is saying, and Paul's saying here, oh no, we are supposed to have these guys help us to come into the unity of the relationship. So we can't have a unified relationship if some of us think he did away with the law and some of us think he is the law. Like he's the ultimate manifestation of the law. We're at odds. We're completely at opposing positions. How are we in unity with that? Because a lot of people say, we need to be more unified with our Christian brothers. It's not possible. Something has got to give. You either have to go there or they have to come here. You can't be unified when you're completely opposite in your beliefs about so many things. We think you need to keep Saturday. They think Sunday. We think you need to not eat pork and shellfish. They think it's great. You can do whatever you want. We think you got to keep the feasts and holy days of Leviticus 23. They think you got to do Christmas and Easter. We think that stuff's pagan. They think our stuff is done away with. How? There's nothing close there. How are we believing in the same Messiah? How are we believing in the same anything? We don't understand God the same. See, to our group, those things are pagan. To those group, they think that we're doing this, we're trying to earn salvation, so somehow we're lost. Right? They literally say, you're mocking Messiah by trying to keep the law. You gotta be kidding me. The greatest mocking of Messiah is to keep breaking it after he has sacrificed himself for you. That's mocking him. He died because you broke it, not because you can't do it. Okay? He didn't die to take away the problem, which was, he did die to take away the problem. Okay? The law wasn't the problem. Your failure to keep it was the problem. Okay? So he died so that you would have an opportunity to live and keep trying and keep trying and repent and keep trying and work it out. The law was not the problem. Otherwise, all Christians, I need you to listen, Christians. You don't realize this, but your system is telling you that God was wrong when he made everything that he gave Moses and the Ten Commandments and the rest of the Torah and all the laws, that he was wrong. That's what you believe. That he made a mistake and that his son had to come and wipe it all out so that you don't have to do any of that stuff because he made a mistake. He thought we could do it and he was wrong. We can't do it. That's what you believe. Don't tell me that's not what you believe. That is what you believe. If you believe the rhetoric that comes out of mainstream Christianity. Because, see, if God says it's right, it's never wrong. If he says it's wrong, it's never right. Period. You can't go anywhere else with this. He says, I am Yahweh, I change not. Didn't change. Now he changed his mind. He sent his son. He fixed the problem. Now we're all good. We're all good to now do the things that caused him to have to die, but we can keep doing them. That's ridiculous. Okay, that's just, there's no logic in any of that. That's how you know we're talking about delusion. Strong delusion. Okay? I mean, there's no other way around this. But guess where that comes from? Fleshly, earthly, demonic tongue. Speak, coming out of them, the words that are coming out of people's teaching, this junk. And people listening and buying into it. And then he forces you to do something really challenging. Find him. I'm not talking like find him, you know, just in the vertical, but find him. Who is he working with? Everywhere in here, he works through people. Find him. Is he in a church? Is he somewhere else? Is he in a home? Where can you find him? These Ephesians 4:11 people. Because he says that we're supposed to come into the unity of belief and knowledge, a relationship of the Son of Elohim to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the completeness of the Son. We are not supposed to be agreeing to disagree. All the rhetoric out there today is, well, we should all just be kumbaya and we should just agree to disagree. No, we're supposed to come into full agreement. Now, you can't do that unless you're ready to obey. You can't do that unless you believe that you want to be discipled. And you're not going to argue. Well, I was taught that the Rosh Kodesh is a Sabbath. I appreciate that, but it's not. Now, that's the end of the argument. Okay? That's it. I settled it right there. If I'm that person, and you believe that. Okay? Otherwise, you can argue. So this is where I love when people say to me, well, you know, Rabbi, I just want to tell you, I've listened to a bunch of your videos, and I mostly agree with everything you say. Thank you for the compliment. I don't know what to do. I agree with most of it, you know. You're off on a few things. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. They think they're actually complimenting me, too. I'm like, well, who are you that I'm supposed to be impressed with the fact that you agree with some of my stuff? Okay? Which is not even my stuff. It's his stuff. At least I think so, and some of you think so, but, you know. But we're not supposed to be there. We're supposed to be to where there's unity in fullness and completeness. We're supposed to all be on the same page when it comes to how we see Messiah and what he did, what he's doing, and everything that's going on from Genesis to Revelation, okay? And you don't have a lot of teachers pushing for that. They're all trying to open up the big tent, so to speak, like, let's have everybody in, right? The idea, that's like a phrase they use, like, in politics and this, that doesn't matter, the idea of having a big tent, right? So everybody can come, the more welcoming. I'm sorry, but I'm going to just throw the message out, and whomsoever will come, okay? But we're not going to make it more palatable for the sake of numbers, okay? Because that's not scriptural. And either you're going to believe what Paul says here or not, okay? And by the way, these guys, he says, this is how you also know that it's about unity of belief and understanding and coming into that completeness. He says, so that we should no longer be children tossed about by every wind of teaching. So in other words, how are you tossed about by every wind of teaching? You heard me teach or you heard somebody else teach and they don't match and now you don't know what to do. I have a bunch of you that will listen to me, think you got it all worked out. Then all of a sudden, somebody shares something with you, or you find something else on YouTube, and now you're confused. Why? Because it's another wind of teaching that's blowing you around. So you're not solidly on your feet. You're kind of being tossed around. If you're being discipled, you're not listening to 16 different teachers. You know, one teacher. Were the apostles going around with more than one teacher? Just one. Oh, but he was Messiah. No, but that's what discipleship is. Okay? You find your teacher and that's it. I know a lot of you are not going to like that I said that. It all sounds cultish and this and that. I don't care. Okay? All right? It is what it is in the book. Either, so just read it and listen and see if it matches. Okay? I don't know what else to tell you. Okay? But I'm telling you, that I look every day, well, maybe not every day, I look often for, and I'll listen to anybody that recommends a teacher. I'm looking for anybody that I can actually be in agreement with. I mean, like, in agreement with, not like we agree on three things, okay? But are we actually in agreement? And then I'll start pulling their videos up. And I go, well, that's not bad, and this is okay. And then, oh, well, there we go. Now that's way off and whatever. And I have to then figure out, if that person would only let me disciple them, they would be fine. Okay? Because some people aren't that far off. But, you know, this isn't talking about everybody should come and everybody should be just a little off. These guys are supposed to bring us into perfection. Completion. Look at the words used by Paul. But that can only work if you submit, if you come ready to obey, as James said. Otherwise, you can't get here. You know what? And there's still a bunch of you watching right now, sitting in this room, who are not ready. And I want you to understand, I don't care. And I only say that from the point of view of like, this is not cultishly like I need you or want you to listen to me. I don't care. It's for you. If you don't listen, you're only hurting you. You can't get where he's saying without being ready to obey. Okay? I don't benefit from any of that. Well, I guess in some small way it would, because maybe the nonsense would be less that we deal with. Okay? All right? But I don't actually get anything out of it. Okay? This is all about, my wife said this during the announcements. She said, all Rabbi cares about is you getting into the kingdom. Now, I know you Christians all think you made your altar call and you're in. Go listen to the teaching, Are You Saved? And you'll understand better, okay? The thing is, I want you to hear the words, well done, good and trustworthy servant. You'll never hear those words if you can't come ready to obey. All right? It just won't happen. You have to be ready to obey. But it's scary. I get it. I know. But you're going to have to deal with your fear. You know, the number one test here is, can you overcome fear? That's really, before he's going to give you a forever body, he needs to know that you've overcome fear. Could you imagine how much fun it would be to live forever in fear and anxiety? You're going to need to fix that. I'm not going to hurt your feelings, hopefully, whatever, but I'm going to tell you right now, I don't believe, this is coming out of my mouth, maybe it's coming from him, I don't know, but I don't believe you're getting a forever suit until you fix that. There's more. And I don't think this comes out of Christianity. I don't think he's just going to wave his hand and fix it for you. Because otherwise there was no point in making you deal with it now. If he could have fixed it for you, which he could, if that's what he would do, why wouldn't he just do it? Okay? Do you understand? It doesn't make any sense. If he wanted to fix it for you ultimately, what's he waiting for? So you need to overcome that. So you can't be ready to obey till you get over your fear. Remember, everything in this book is the battle between fear and doubt versus trust and belief. I say that a million times. Are you ready to do that? Okay, because you're not going to hear the words, well done, good and trustworthy servant, if you don't understand that to get to the good fruit, you have to be ready to obey. And you have to be careful about who's speaking and what you're speaking and what the teachings are, because that was the beginning of the chapter that James led to that verse. So you understand what the topic was. And it was comparing your desires inwardly that would be driving the outward. Are your desires in line with the above, or are they earthly, fleshly, and demonic? That's pretty strong. He said it. I'm just quoting it. All right? I don't think I'm misquoting it. I think it's pretty straightforward. And so I just really need you guys to understand and try to embrace that. Let's go before the Father. Father, we come before you. And Father, we are really excited about, maybe in some levels more excited, more levels where we're a little bit worried and concerned. You're asking a lot of us. And we know you're asking a lot, but you're also offering so much. And Father, we understand that what you're asking of us is only for our benefit, that we overcome fear and doubt, that we come to a place of trust and belief where we can be ready to obey. Because ultimately, how we learn to do it in the vertical here is how we're going to do it with you in person. And so, Father, we thank you for your word and for the teachings and for the anointed, inspired writings of the apostles so that we can see and receive from those anointed teachers your words and your understanding of what you expect from us. And that you explain how things actually function through us, how the desires that we may have come out through our tongue and maybe then expressed in ways that are teaching and how we should be concerned about those things. So, Father, I'm going to ask on behalf of all the people that you would help them and strengthen them to know when they found an Ephesians 4:11 person, that you give them that sort of strong conviction to know when somebody is actually anointed of you and not self-anointed, so that they can get into the structure properly and be ready to obey. So, Father, we thank you, we praise you, we give you all glory and honor for all things that we've received today as we come before you in the authority of Yeshua, our Messiah. And together we say, Amen, Amen, Amen.